Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver. And, you know, it's fun to have the podcast because I get to bring you international experts. We've had people on from South Africa, from Europe, from South America. But my favorite guests are my hometown Pittsburgh people that, and in this case, it's a friend of mine. I am so happy to welcome to the show my friend Bonnie Artman Fox. She believes magic happens when people have the courage to talk about what's really going on in the workplace. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist, a speaker, and boss whisperer who equips executive leaders and team managers with powerful communication tools to stop divisive behaviors, resolve conflict, and build the team trust needed to create healthy work cultures that drive results. Bonnie, I am so happy to have you on the show.
Oh, I am thrilled to be here. Thank you, Rob. It's such an honor to be with you.
And listen, today is not just one of those days. Today is a special day for Bonnie because today she is launching her book. And Bonnie, first of all, tell us, what's the title of your book?
How Did My Family Get in My Office? Surprising ways your upbringing impacts you at work and what you can do about it.
I love that because, listen, I've always talked about the fact that everybody has baggage. We all have stuff that we carry with us. And sometimes we don't talk about it. Sometimes we don't even know about it. It's the old Joe Harry window where there's stuff that other people know about us that we don't. And there's stuff that nobody knows about us, us or anyone, but it's there. And what you're saying is my past has links to my present.
Absolutely. It does. Yes.
So wonderful. And today is that the launch for the book. I would encourage everyone, we'll talk about this more. Bonnie is not just a friend of mine, which does bring her intelligence into question, but she is an extremely smart person. And as a therapist, we can all learn from her. I met her at the National Speakers Association Pittsburgh chapter. And I have to say that, you know, it's a very warm and friendly environment there, but there are some people who stick out as just being the welcoming, wonderful people that make you feel like this is a group I want to be a part of. And Bonnie is one of those people. So,
thank you, Rob. It's always a joy to see you at our meetings.
Well, thank you. And it's wonderful to be there. It's also a great place. And this is a plug for the National Speakers Association. If anyone out there is an aspiring speaker, the National Speakers Association is fantastic. And the reason is, for the most part, you're not learning about the nuts and bolts of putting together a presentation. You're learning about running a speaking business. And that's a really great tool that you don't get in other places. You know, so that being said, Bonnie, I didn't get you on here to talk about National Speakers Association. I didn't bring you on actually to talk about our friendship. I brought you on because your book is talking about life. It's talking about relationships. To me, I learned very early on, right after my injury, what life was all about. I came to understand that life is about relationships. And kind of in my understanding of your book, it's that idea that the way that you form early relationships, the way that you form family relationships, is going to have an impact on the way that you form relationships for the rest of your life. Is that a correct read on what you're talking about?
It is. And specifically, what I looked at in the book was how 11 leaders learned how to deal with conflict from their upbringing. And I had the privilege of interviewing these leaders who, with full transparency and vulnerability, talked about how conflict was handled in their upbringing and how it has impacted how they deal with conflict in the workplace. And through their own story, it's their portion of each chapter is written in their voice. They talk about what it was like and also what they did on a very conscious level to either change their family conflict pattern for the better and or to leverage their family strengths. So in looking back at our family upbringing, I want to be really clear. My intent is not at all to blame, shame, or finger point or throw anybody under the bus.
Yes.
That is not at all the intent. I truly believe parents do the best they can with what they know at
Definitely.
The time.
Yep.
The intent of looking back is simply to understand so that we can then make conscious choices of who we want to be as we live out our lives and show up at work.
Right. And I love what you said there, because it's not about blame. So many times in our society, I feel like we have a victim mentality where yeah. I am stuck in this position because of what someone did to me. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we can blame our parents with that. My mom did this when I was growing up, or my mom handled things this way, or I learned this pattern of behavior from someone in my family. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, that's what has made me what I am today. And but you're talking about this not from a judgment perspective or from a blame perspective, but from an acknowledgement and a learning perspective. Is that properly summarizing what you're saying?
Yes, very much. Yes. To look back, and many of the leaders, it was so fascinating. They actually had conversations with their parents also about what it was like when their parents were growing up, of how conflict was handled in their parents' upbringing, and generationally how those patterns were passed down from one generation to the next. And again, from the book perspective, the leaders talked about how they changed their conflict pattern. And some of them had some pretty tough upbringings, but they didn't, again, as you're saying, did not stay a victim. They chose self-responsibility of who they wanted to be. And they, at the end of each chapter, they give their personalized productive conflict management strategies that they found were meaningful in their own lives to change their conflict pattern for the better.
That's great. So how did you pick these 11 leaders?
To be honest, it was God.
Okay.
I prayed about it of, okay, God, who do you want me to interview? And I shared with people like yourself and other colleagues at NSA, our Pittsburgh chapter, and said, I have this idea for a book. Do you know any leaders who would be willing to talk with me about their family upbringing in a way of self-awareness and not to blame, as we are just speaking about? And sure enough, at least two of the leaders I met through colleagues at NSA. And what is so fascinating is there are three leaders that I have never met in person.
Okay.
And we spoke on the phone and they gave me their interview. And they, again, I just was so amazed at how open and transparent they were to a total stranger.
Right.
And told me their story. And so that's how I met them. And some I knew through other associations, like speaking events that I've done, and met those leaders and really have high respect for them, and asked if they'd be willing to let me interview them. Now, just so you know, and the listeners today, the leaders all gave me fictitious names. So in the book, while their stories are completely real, that the information has been changed to protect the innocent, if you will, and
right.
for confidentiality, and is not the leader's real names.
Got it. So, I mean, Joe Friday from Dragnet, you know, that names have been changed to protect the innocent. I love that idea.
Right.
So can you give me some examples of what some of these leaders experienced in their families? And then maybe after that, we can talk about some of the things that they've either learned how to... Yeah, we'll talk about afterwards how they've either leveraged or moved on from that experience. But just that idea of what were they going through as they were growing up?
Sure. One of the leaders grew up in an alcoholic family. Her dad was an alcoholic. Her mom, in her words, pretended nothing was happening. And her father could be quite verbally abusive. And there was also a lot of chaos in the family growing up. it wasn't unusual for police to come to the house one night for a drug raid because their brothers were selling drugs. They'd be yelling and screaming. And the next morning, it was as if nothing ever happened. Mm-hmm. And her role in the family was to bring calm out of the chaos. And she was always in there trying to bring order. Well, fast forward into her adult life, she's a leader in the tech industry. And she happens to read an article one day about adult children of alcoholics. And she was intrigued by that. And she went to her company's EAP department and asked about it. And through some questions, came to realize she had become an alcoholic, that it wasn't unusual for her to drink to the point of a blackout and be able to be fully functioning the next day and go to work. And she fully embraced recovery. She got involved in AA. She immersed herself in therapy and recognized that she was using alcohol herself to numb all of the emotional pain from her upbringing. And she really changed her life, worked on repairing relationships with her family members. A few years passed, she had the opportunity for a promotion. Her employer saw she has great potential as a leader, but in essence said, you know, you've got some rough edges. She was, by her own admission, still overly aggressive. And her employer offered her leadership development training. And so she went to this class. And the facilitator asked her, tell me about your upbringing. Because she was very upfront of saying why she was there. She said, I could tell I had some things I needed to do to calm down, and some other leaders in that class needed to learn how to speak up. So the facilitator asked, tell me about your upbringing. And she told her, and the facilitator said, you're safe. You can stop running now.
Wow.
And that was, even though, again, she had already been sober and working on herself, that was instrumental of helping her to tone down that overly aggressive leadership style, because there was still a lot of pain inside that she was still running from. And she has gone on to become an incredibly inspirational, empathic leader, totally transformed her, not only her conflict style, but also her leadership style, and has made peace with all of her family members, made peace with both of her parents before they died.
Right.
So that's one example of a really dramatic turnaround of her conflict style.
Yeah. And what you're talking about is that it's that acknowledgement of the past, but it's the, how do I take what I've gone through and understand it, utilize it, and then grow from it, which is beautiful.
And absolutely.
And in some ways, a little bit about what you're talking about, I see a lot of alcoholics and a lot of people in general deal with a guilt, shame, and fear, mm-hmm. right? Where you don't want other people to know about what has happened, what you are doing, what you're like, whatever it is. Most of us go through life afraid that someone will find out who we really are. Mm-hmm. And there is that freeing element of when you begin to address, first of all, when you become aware of who you are.
Yes.
And when you realize that, yes, you do have deficits and weaknesses, you've got some issues, but also when you own those, it really frees you to then develop yourself, because you're not afraid that people are going to find out who you are. There, you already told them, and yeah. Then you're kind of working through that. I love it. And let me just say, I think you have like an actual title for this, the connection between your past, your childhood, and with your current life. What's the official title that you have for that?
Yes, I talk about this in the book, is the workplace family factor. And it's the connection between how conflict was handled in your upbringing and how you handle conflict today as an adult, and especially in the workplace. And it's those situations that you find yourself in your work setting, and the dynamic is very similar to your upbringing. And it may be a boss who yells, just like maybe a parent yelled, or you may find yourself picking up the pieces for your coworkers, just like you often picked up the pieces for a sibling or another family member. It's fascinating of how our family shows up in the office. And when we can have that awareness of our family factor, that's when we can do something about it. And as you know, self-awareness is the foundation of emotional intelligence. And in my portion of each chapter, I talked about what the leader did well from an emotional intelligence perspective of recognizing their family factor, and again, what they did either to change their conflict pattern as a result of that awareness or leveraging their family strengths for the better.
I'm thinking about it. There's the commercial that's on now. I think it's a Progressive commercial that talks about us turning into our parents, right? Yeah. Us becoming our parents. Is that an element of what you're talking about, that kind of like this, we, as we age, we become subtly and you know, almost unconsciously a little bit more like our parents than we would ever acknowledge or, you know, maybe want to acknowledge?
There can be an element of that. And I would also say that actually we know that by 5 or 6, at really young ages, we and little kids identify, again, unconsciously, how we're going to handle situations when things get tense or when there's conflict. It's amazing. And I see that in my grandchildren now of how that when things are uncomfortable, what they tend to do. And they are, well, the younger one is he just turned 2, and the other one is going to be 5. So we're still the 5-year-old. I can definitely see it. And I saw that as a family therapist, that when families came together in my office, it was often the little child, the 5, 6-year-old, who would speak the truth about what was really going on in the family. And we could see then as we followed them, how they were gonna navigate through life came to play, and it was seen early on.
Yeah, so I wanna pick up on another concept that you mentioned. You were talking about emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Tell me, explain for my audience and explain for me, because you are a smart person, explain for me what is emotional intelligence, and then how do you work on that? How do you strengthen that? How do you build that?
I think about emotional intelligence is the awareness of our emotions in ourselves and in others. And in taking that awareness of our emotions and then managing those emotions. It's not that emotions are bad, and it's certainly that we can't keep them out of the workplace. They go with us wherever we go. It's the awareness of how do we handle them? And a lot of times when we are triggered in a situation that's conflictual, we feel that knot in our stomach, or we feel a flush feeling coming upon us, or our palms get a little sweaty. We can just feel like our fight or flight freeze response is getting triggered. A lot of times we don't pay attention to that. And that's when we blurt out something that we later regret, or we avoid and get out of dodge, avoid the situation because it's uncomfortable. And with self-awareness, we can recognize when we're getting triggered and then make that conscious choice to manage those emotions so that we show up as our best and handle conflict respectfully.
Yeah, I love that. It's the emotional intelligence is having the connection with your emotions. And yes, then that really brings you to a level of self-awareness. And as you become more self-aware, you are not just experiencing emotions, but now you're looking at those emotions, kind of trying to sort through them and understand how to best move forward in a productive way and not just react on the emotional visceral level, right?
Exactly. And I'm so grateful that we're talking about this, because as I looked at all of the leaders, there was a theme there of how they were able to do this. As you know, it's messy. It's uncomfortable. Right. I know it is for me to look at our emotions. And I came upon a word that I was like, this is it. This is the quality in these leaders. And the word is pertinacity. And it's a word, it's a combination of persistence and tenacity. And it means sticking with what's difficult. And wow. That's what these leaders did. They learned how to stick with the emotional difficulty of sorting through emotions and transforming their conflict style. And what I love about the dictionary definition of pertinacity is it's a combination of courage, conviction, and a little bit of stubbornness.
I love it. So
I love that.
Yeah. It's not, we don't do this because it's easy. We do it because it's right.
Yes.
Okay. So pertinacity is a word that I've not heard before, but in my experience with you, you've got another word that I haven't heard before. And now this goes back in our pre-interview, you were telling me, you know, we all talk about the elephant in the room. You actually literally have an elephant in your room, right?
I do.
Okay. And not only do you have an elephant in your room, but your elephant has a name, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yes. Again, I come upon these fun names that I just love them, that make things unique. And it's Mokita, and it's not a drink.
Okay.
It's Mokita, M-O-K-I-T-A. And it's actually a word from one of the tribes in Papua New Guinea that means the truth we know about and agree not to speak of. And in our English language, it's the elephant in the room.
Right. Wow. So you said it's the truth we know of, but refuse to speak about.
Yeah. We there's like this unspoken, we agree not to speak about this.
Right.
So it may be the person in the office who has the anger problem and everyone walks on eggshells around that person, or the person who we can smell alcohol in their breath in the morning, or and they're known to their mood to be erratic and there's suspicion of that there's an alcohol issue, but it's never talked about because of maybe what position that person has. So there's a lot of Mokitas, many oftentimes in our families and in our work life. And again, what the leaders in the book, they recognized, okay, there's a Mokita here,
right,
and we're going to talk about it, we're going to address it. And they took personal responsibility to change the only person they can change, which is themselves.
Wow.
That's all any of us can do.
Yeah. And when it comes to that Mokita, that thing that we know but we don't talk about, how much energy is given to that in the workplace? That seems like it's got to be fairly time consuming to deal with what we see but we don't actually talk about.
Oh, exactly. And it's almost like there's another unspoken line item on budgets of unresolved conflict that is attributed to Mokitas.
Right.
And it's the aftermath of an emotional outburst where maybe an HR professional is dealing with hurt feelings with employees that is because of this outburst that happened in a meeting. And it costs that HR professional time away from their other work responsibilities. And there's a lot of additional time, lost productivity spent on these Mokitas. I also call that conflict time off, that everybody's at work, but they're not being productive because they're dealing with all the Mokitas and the conflict that can be quite costly to organizations.
Well, you know, it's funny. When you said conflict timeout, I immediately went the other direction. Okay. And that is, I was thinking like a timeout and a safe place to get away from conflict. And like, okay, we have a conflict timeout, like timeout, everybody just get along, go to your happy place, be happy. And we're going to have a conflict timeout. But what you're talking about is exactly the opposite, in which like, okay, everybody, we're trying to be productive, but that conflict is having a direct impact on the bottom line and our ability to resolve it, our ability to to deal with the unresolved conflict is impacting our ability to be productive in the workplace.
Absolutely. Because we know when there is conflict, it affects, from a brain science perspective, it affects our ability to focus. We're thinking about the conversation, the emotional outburst that just happened in a meeting. And then we go back to our work and it's hard for us to focus because we're thinking about what just happened. Our prefrontal cortex, the best thinking in our brain shuts down because our brain is flooded with all of these stress hormones. There's one study that showed that unresolved conflict in the workplace can cost up to $359 billion a year in organizations when conflict isn't dealt with early, directly, and productively. So it is a huge cost to our organizations and morale and turnover, employee engagement, all of those things are affected when we're not dealing with conflict effectively.
Wow. That's a huge number. And listen, you've been fantastic. I want to just highlight one other thing that you said, and that is a while back in our conversation, you said the only person that you can change is you.
Yes.
And that in all of this, yes, the whole exercise ultimately comes down to this. You're assessing how you got to where you are, mm-hmm, but the only one that can help you to move from where you are is you. Bonnie, thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for helping me to kind of process through all this and helping all of us to have that understanding. And really, I would encourage everybody, go get the book. All right. Learn about how to acknowledge your past, to understand it, and then to take the key lessons and to move forward from there either. And you also said this, that sometimes it's growing in spite of or leveraging. So mm-hmm, some of the experience we had about dealing with conflict are actually good things.
Yes.
And it's not always bad, but whether it's good or bad, figure out what it is and how to move on from there. Listen, Bonnie, if people are looking to get a hold of you or looking to find your book, where can they find you? Is there like a book launch party, or how are you handling everything today?
Yes, they can go to Amazon to get the book. Again, the name is How Did My Family Get in My Office? And also on my website, BonnieArtmanFox.com, I have an assessment on the homepage that you can click, identify my conflict style. And it's a real quick assessment to help you understand how your upbringing impacts how you deal with conflict in your work life. And related to that, I also have a mini course on my homepage where I have short videos that highlight some of the leaders in the book that can give you an understanding of about your own family upbringing. And I also explain a 4-part framework to help you take your understanding about your family upbringing and change your family conflict pattern for the better.
Wonderful. I will put links to all of that down in the show notes so that anybody that's interested can just click there and get right to you, because this has been a phenomenal conversation. Bonnie, thank you so much. Now we get to my favorite part of the show, and that is 3 questions to establish your humanity. Bonnie, are you ready for this?
Oh boy, here we go. Okay.
All right. What can somebody do to get a gold star from Bonnie Artman Fox? What is that one thing that someone can do? You say that is an amazing thing that they've done.
Come over for dinner and let's have a meal together around the dining room table and have a glass of wine and talk. I love that. I love bringing people together around the dining room table.
You know what? You've hit on 2 of my favorite things, and that is food and fellowship, right? We're just getting, yes, together and enjoying a meal, and more than the meal is enjoying each other. I love that as well. Yeah. What does your dream day look like?
Dream day is I am with my husband, and we are either putzing around the house or going for a Sunday afternoon drive. Yes, we do a Sunday afternoon drive, and we call my parents as a part of that call. It's a ritual every Sunday afternoon. And And again, being with family and friends, my husband and I also love to travel, and so being with him is a highlight.
Fantastic. And so you brought up the dining room table, and I was, and this was going to be a question of mine before we even started with the whole family idea. And that is, in your past, when you remember your family sitting around the dining room table, what was the meal that your family, that would bring your family together, and everybody would say, like that smell that wafts through the house that brought everybody down to the kitchen table as soon as they smelled it?
Oh my goodness, meatloaf, cream corn, and mashed potatoes.
I love it. It's, you know what? It's amazing to me that it's not the special meals. It's the regular everyday meals that,
Yes.
and it's no wonder that they're called comfort food
Mm-hmm.
because those are the things that make you feel like it's just another day of being warm, safe, and cozy in my home with the people that I love.
Yes. And can I tell you a short story about that?
Sure.
About before COVID, I had planned to have a meal around a table at a restaurant here that you know here in town at the Grand Concourse. And they actually have a room there called the Boardroom. And I had invited all of the leaders and their significant others to come and my editor, and we were all going to have a homemade meal of meatloaf, mashed potatoes, green beans, and apple pie, and celebrate their contribution to the book. And unfortunately, because of COVID, we've postponed it twice. So I'm hoping next year we are going to do that celebration. But yes, bringing people around the table and good home cooking is near and dear to my heart.
Right. Well, I have to tell you that one of the folks that was on the show, I don't know if you know Al Condoluzzi or not, but he's a kind of a staple here in Pittsburgh among nonprofits and among the in the disability community. But he talked about, I think it was Easter, that they had a virtual Easter, and where he and his wife, they cooked a meal, and then some, there were maybe five or six couples, and they all got on Zoom. And they sat down to eat their Easter meal together. And even though they were all eating their own food, they still had the fellowship of all being around the same table. So maybe you need to do like a blue apron order for everybody, all of the leaders, in which they all get the same meal. We all sit down and you all eat it together and enjoy the time to celebrate what you've done. Bonnie, you've been fantastic. I really appreciate you being on the show. I
Thank
wish
you.
you the best of luck with this book launch. I would encourage everybody, go out, get her book. It's fantastic. She's fantastic. I will also encourage you, subscribe to the podcast. Send us an email, contact us, follow us on social media. Just about every social media, we are at LFSP. As in Learning from Smart People podcast, LFSP podcast. Look us up, connect, and I will remind everyone, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.